Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At-Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
I thought about this a lot when Folsy was gone on paternity leave, is when, if ever, we would again engage in the wheel of football. Well, that day has arrived. That moment has arrived. Folsy, I hand the mic to you.
Yes. Come one, come all. It's the wheel of football.
Yes, Ron. Ron, do you like that? You like the music and the intro?
I love it.
Here we go. Let's go to Big D for Jerry Jones, who's continuing to yammer like he always does.
He sucks, Ron.
He said...
Have you had a chance to read any of Swagger?
No, I'm saving it.
Jimmy Johnson's a big part of that book.
I bet you his opinion changed over the years.
He reveals their difficulties. It's pretty good.
I'm sorry, Folsy.
The latest, he said, San Francisco and the Cowboys haven't won a Super Bowl in 25 years. Understand that. San Francisco's in the same boat as Dallas. You like the old deflection here from Jerry Jones.
You know, somebody else's misery doesn't take away from your misery. They have the most lucrative franchise in sports, and they can't get to a Super Bowl. They haven't been to one since... They beat a team in 1995, your Pittsburgh Steelers.
It's not all measured on Super Bowls. That's a fallacy when it comes to the Steelers, too. I shouldn't say fallacy. It's just, it's. If you measured everything only on Super Bowl wins, most teams would never, ever, ever be successful all the time.
Right.
The San Francisco 49ers are winning playoff games regularly. They just got to a Super Bowl. They might have gotten to another one if their quarterback room didn't get destroyed this season. They beat Dallas last year and this year in a playoff game. They're keeping him out of the Super Bowl. What the hell is he talking about?
That's the best part.
The Cowboys have had very few playoff wins. Romo win one while he was there, I believe?
Invalid comparison. Niners are really good and winning right now. The Cowboys are underachieving.
The best part of that is that they've eliminated Dallas themselves the past two playoff runs. It's unbelievable. The other question to that with Jerry Jones is, will Dallas ever win another Super Bowl while he's the owner of the team?
He's no kid anymore. He's 80 and looked every bit of it after the game the other day. When he called that, he goes, the loss was sickening. I think he is wondering if he's going to get a shot at it again.
That was a yes or no question, Ron.
You want me to say will he or won't
will he?
I'll say no.
No. It mostly because it's becoming a golden age of quarterbacks again, and his guy's not good enough that he has signed to a long-term lucrative deal. Sorry, Jerry.
The wheel of football.
Let's stick with the San Francisco 49ers, shall we?
My turn to answer first, Ron. Should we alternate?
Sure.
John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan. Oh, Kyle Shanahan actually said it himself, saying that they're going to move on from Jimmy G. He's not coming back next year. So if you're the San Francisco 49ers, who's your starting quarterback for next year?
Well, I had this conversation with Bob Pompeiani a couple weeks ago and Ron, and to me there was an easy answer then. It was Brock Purdy. He's a guy who, in the same parameters of the same offense, radically outperformed Jimmy G as Mr. Irrelevant. So, to me, he's your starter. He won a bunch of games and was great.
And he have an elbow surgery?
Well, then he had an elbow injury, so now my opinion is obviously different.
Trey Lance. Right?
Well, wait a second. What was the question, Folsy?
Who would be your starting quarterback?
Well, it might have to be Trey Lance.
Process of elimination, right?
Yeah. If Jimmy G's gone, then you have to go with Trey Lance, assuming he's right. But if it's Purdy, if he can make that comeback, which it doesn't look like he will be, then he's your obvious leader in the clubhouse. The guy was great.
Has to be Trey Lance. I mean, unless they go out and trade for Aaron Rodgers or somebody. I mean, I don't know who else it's going to be. And he said Jimmy G won't be back. didn't leave much room for misinterpretation there. And if the guy's not healthy, Purdy, what are you going to do? You go to a guy, it's not like you're in a terrible situation because he was your starter going into last year.
One more story that's Niners related. They, of course, are the team that's been the most outspoken. And
hold on a second, Folsy. And I'm sorry to interrupt. My wheels are turning here, Ron. Do they have to move on from Jimmy G? Would
They've
you choose?
That. They would said
you,
that yesterday.
They have to?
They didn't say they have to. They said
they will.
I think it was Shanahan said, I can't envision any scenario when he's back.
Would you choose Jimmy G over Trey Lance if you were the 49ers? They don't have to move on from anybody. They only have one healthy quarterback.
Well, I don't know. They don't have to, but they said they're going to. That's good enough for me. I mean, it's
well, doesn't that raise the question, should they?
Well, that's a different story, but he asked who's going to be the quarterback, and I'm saying Trey Lance because Jimmy G's not in the picture.
Right, I'm advancing that conversation to, are the 49ers right for moving on from Jimmy G?
They must have another plan. Maybe there's somebody else they're looking at bringing in. I don't think they would say that publicly yesterday that he's not going to be back. And they said it yesterday.
If Brock Purdy's out for the whole year, which is a possibility, and all they have is Trey Lance, then I'm absolutely considering Jimmy G. He's a guy who knows the offense and has won me games. Some. So, you know, what else are you going to do? I don't even know if I love Trey Lance going into last year, and then the first couple games happened. I'm not so sure this would be the wisest move for them.
I get the feeling, though, that relationship isn't very good at this point.
It wasn't good last year.
This past year, right.
And they put things aside to make it work, but I don't know. Can you continue that kind of relationship?
I don't know.
That probably factors in a lot.
They must have a plan. You know, they're either going to trade to draft somebody or
yeah, the question is their plan good? Because a lot of people would say it wasn't good going into this year because they don't like Trey Lance. A lot of people would say they had the wrong plan and got lucky with Jimmy G coming back and with Purdy.
Do they absolutely not like Trey Lance?
I didn't say that. I said people don't like Trey Lance and think
drafted him number one and had made him their starter going into this year.
Yes,
and
they did.
And then he gets hurt. That tells me they believe in Trey Lance.
There's no doubt they do. The question is, are they right? They weren't last year. They wanted to get rid of Garoppolo and were lucky he fell back into their laps.
Yeah, but you don't count on Lance going down in the second game or third game, whatever it was. First game, second game, third game.
Is it not still a viable question, were the 49ers right to choose Trey Lance over Garoppolo?
No, I think they chose the guy they thought was best, and I have no problem with that.
Okay.
The other part of this is, of course, they're the team that's saying, hey, we should dress more than two quarterbacks in a game. And you agree with that? That rule should be changed?
Yeah,
absolutely.
I have no problem with that. Add a third guy. What does it hurt?
I don't get it. I mean, I do like the panic scenario where a team has to go to its emergency quarterback and just to see what they do whenever they have to have their offense led by that. But
there
I think
is.
It's dumb.
He looks like he's 100. They just had Jerry Jones on there. He looks like he's 100 years old. Not
he ain't
80.
Winning with that guy. They just showed Dak.
Look at him.
Yeah. Yeah, he's...
He doesn't look good, does he?
And I don't think Dak is bad by any means, but there's just too many
guys
better
than him. Not as good
as
those other guys.
Yeah.
What's Stephen Jones like? Is that his son's name?
That's
right?
His son. Man, he doesn't even look good either. Of course, I'm one to talk.
I think they're glad they chose Taco Charlton, one pick ahead of T.J. Watt, Ron.
Jerry's a billionaire, though. His problems don't seem quite as bad as maybe other people.
What if they'd gotten Watt and then still drafted Micah Parsons? Oh. Can you imagine those bookends? Be the greatest in NFL history.
Think they would win a playoff game?
Maybe. Maybe they'd win a game.
Maybe.
Is this my turn now?
Yeah. CBS Sports has put together the most important free agent to sign for every single team in the National Football League. You scroll down to the Pittsburgh Steelers, and they have one. Cameron Sutton, the 27-year-old cornerback. Should the Steelers make, everything that they can? Should they do everything that they can to bring this guy back, even if they have to overpay?
I'm not in favor of overpaying for Cam Sutton. Would he be my top choice? Probably. I mean, who else? Ogunjobi, maybe. I'm trying to think of
Edmonds.
Edmonds is I would be very interested in as well, especially if he brings his brother with him. I would say Cam is... my top choice. You need corners. He was very valuable this year, very versatile, but I'm not overpaying for him. I'm going to find somebody else if I can't come to a reasonable deal.
Ron just hit on something very important, Folsy.
Mm-hmm.
If signing Terrell Edmunds means that I get Tremaine, even if I have to overpay Terrell, he becomes a priority a trillion times over Cam Sutton.
A chip into the process.
A trillion times over Cam Sutton. But I do like Cam Sutton. He's versatile, good player. If I can't get Tremaine with Terrell, then yes, Sutton's my priority, but not to the point where, you know, I'll overpay a little to
keep
him.
What's overpaying?
I don't know. What's his market value? I would have to know that.
Yeah.
What's his market value, Folsy?
I don't know off the top of my head. I have to do just a little bit of research. Right
you should.
Here.
You're the beat writer, and you're running the wheel of football.
I am. But I've got other spokes on this wheel that I want to attend to before I get to that.
Would I slightly overpay so that I don't have to go chasing that position again along with a draft pick? Yeah, I think that's smart business because it's a premium position, but not by a lot, Ron.
I agree.
Tremaine.
And what if you think you're going to draft Joey Porter Jr.? Mm-hmm. Then he's not as valuable to me if they get the corner in the first round.
To me, he is because he's a different kind of corner, and I need more than one.
He can play inside, outside, no doubt.
He's not a guy that he's not an elite corner.
Very versatile.
And if I lose him, even if I draft Joey Porter, then who's my number two who can do what he can do? I'm either going to have to sign somebody or draft somebody else. What about William Jackson? Dulac says they're not even bringing him back. What was that all about then?
I don't know.
It's because he was cheap, I
guess.
Did
I read Dulac's answers right these past couple weeks?
I thought that he wasn't coming back.
Why did they bring him here?
I don't know.
And then who?
And he had history where he came from.
Well, they liked him in the draft.
Washington didn't think he, you know, was a player.
And then there's Witherspoon, no. And then there, even though he thinks he's a top five corner. And then there's Levi Wallace, who I like as
a
number three.
He played a little better than I thought he was going
to.
Yeah,
as a number three type guy. But I think Cam Sutton's a good player at a premium position. So, yeah, I'd overpay him a little. Sure.
And at a position they're not very deep in, as we just outlined. That factors in as well.
Precisely, Folsy.
All right, I know you're fired up. 2024 is the year that the AFL returns. The Arena Football League. You watching? You interested?
You ever go to an Arena Football League game?
No.
I never did either. Never did either. Who was the coach? Joe Herring? He was a coach on the Maulers when I covered the Maulers of the USFL. His nickname was Snorts. Snorts. How are you, Snorts? I never went to an Arena Football League game.
I'm Herring. He's not the coach anymore, Folsy. Who is?
You like that, Horst?
They have a new coach who's a notable name, don't they?
They do? I don't know.
Last year it was Kirby Wilson, correct?
Yes.
This year it's not him.
Yes.
But somebody else notable.
You're right.
Who was it? What's the other? The Maulers. Their coach is back. The one that said the player didn't want the food or something. Wasn't that the story?
No, that was Kirby Wilson. He's gone.
No, he's talking about the Arena Football League.
Yeah,
what am I talking about?
I think Kirby Wilson is with the USFL.
Ray Horton, by the way, is the new head coach.
Ray Horton. Wait, it's not the same team?
No, it's not the same league. Well, that gives the Arena Football League.
That gives you your answer to your question is no, I won't watch a second of anything outside of the NFL as far as pro football. I never have, and I never will, maybe the XFL, because they had a couple of innovations back then that interested me for a minute, Ron. The helmet cam.
Their most famous player was?
Rod Smart.
He hate me.
Anything else, Falsey?
Yeah, I have one more thing here. And that's Coach Prime. Deion Sanders, he says that he's not getting into names. He shies away from names because he doesn't even know the names of all of his players right now. But he did just attract a class of 42 newcomers in just 8 weeks on the job at Colorado. So my question is, how long will it take before we see Colorado make a playoff appearance? And it could expand. Keep that in mind.
I'm going to say no more than 3 years. I think he's going to do an incredible job there. I think he's going to lure great players. And as long as – I don't know who his assistants are. As long as he has some great assistants around him, I think they're going to be dynamite.
I'm not so sure about that. I'm not so sure, but it'll certainly help when UCLA and USC flee. Are they both leaving, Ron? Yeah,
yes.
So this year we had USC. Where's Colorado here?
Way down. They finished last.
They're last. So you're going to have to contend with USC. Utah has a very good program under Whittingham. You know, they've been good for a long time. Washington, Oregon draws good. Wow, look at all the ranked teams they had this year. USC, Utah, Washington, Oregon, Oregon State, and UCLA. He's got his work cut out for him, but, man, when those two teams leave, yeah, when are they leaving?
I thought 25 or 26.
So if he says within 3 years, yeah, well, then you got to be a national playoff team. I'm going to say no, Folsy.
But it's going to expand the playoff, right?
Oh, to 8 teams.
Yeah.
Think Narduzzi gets in? Who do you think gets in first, Ron? Franklin, Narduzzi, or Dion to the playoff?
Wow.
I'm sorry, Palsy. Did I upstage
no,
the
good. I like when the topics have legs.
That's an interesting question. Legs. I mean, I think Dion's going to do great work, but, I mean, Franklin, everything I hear, they're going to be knocking on the door next year. But they can't beat Michigan and Ohio State. They got to figure out how to do that.
Might not happen.
They're
going to
probably be a top five team in the preseason.
Might be
for
right
what
around
it's worth,
there. And also, Franklin would have been in an 8-team playoff how many times already?
Three or four? Yeah, two or three.
Right. Isn't it going to 12?
Is it going to 12, Ron?
Going to 12.
When?
I think in 24. I think it was supposed to be 26, and they moved it up to 24.
How did I miss that one, Folsy? I thought it was stuck at 8.
I want it to be 8. I think that's the perfect number.
I mean, it's going to 12, then Franklin would have been in there 6 times already.
Yes. And Colorado will probably be in there within the next couple years. If it expanded to 12 right away.
If it's going to 12, then I say yes, Ron. 12 teams. My God, it's getting like the NFL.
It is. Thanks, Folsy, for a wonderful Wheel of Football. We really appreciate
it. James,
we really missed it.
Yeah, we missed
it. Welcome, Ron.
And then James Franklin can go barely over 500 every year but still be in it in the playoffs, and they'll laud him in State College the way they do the local football team here.
Will they give him a contract extension
again?
We
were 15th.
They've already given him a contract extension.
I know.
We were 15th, and we almost made the playoff. We didn't have a losing season, though. Let's give him an extension, another one. Thank you, Folsy.
Thank you, Joe.
Coming up, Ron, I have an unbelievable question for you two about local events in Pittsburgh. When is Noah Hiles? That's not even his name.
Next.
Is that his name?
Yeah.
Is that his name, Ron?
It's Hiles, isn't it?
Yeah, Hiles.
Hiles. I said that.
Noah Hiles. Okay.
12:30.
He too.
Is he coming up? 12:30.
He too was.
Well,
in
then
the...
he's next, Folsy.
Yes,
why didn't you jump in and keep me from embarrassing myself?
I got in your ear when you were halfway through that.
Ron, I'm very misinformed. I thought the playoff was going to 8 teams. I thought Noah Hiles, I didn't even know he was coming on.
You're still.
You should have just jumped in.
You
Folsy.
Are still living it in that romantic evening you had with Mrs. Starkey
the
other night.
Yeah, seeing little.
Noah Hiles was also in the building last night for that pit game.
Yes, he was, and I want to ask him about this little dust up, and I also want to ask him about how solid ground Pitt is on to get into the NCAA tournament, and then I have a fun little segment for you, gentlemen. The most popular events coming up in Pittsburgh is...
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
As far as ticket sales go, I want to know which one Folsy and Ron would go to, perhaps together. That's coming up here on Cook and Joe. Man, is it fun to watch college basketball again with a local view to it, I should say, with the local club playing important games on a national stage like last night. Pitt goes into North Carolina and wins again. Here to talk about that and one of the very interesting sidebars from that game is Mr. Noah Hiles from the Post-Gazette. You can read his stuff at postgazette.com. Noah, we appreciate you joining us. You're on the Nemecolon fan hotline. Nemecolon around every corner creates real-life magic for guests. The headline on your story: after Jason Capel's outburst at North Carolina, Pitt's coach, who is his brother Jeff, of course, explains complicated relationship. So Jason Capel used to play at North Carolina. Really good player. Helped them to a Final Four. Apparently, many years ago, when Jeff was at Oklahoma, Jason supported him, which you understand, right? By wearing an Oklahoma shirt to a game against North Carolina. And I don't know if people held that against him, Noah, or what's going on here, but there was chirping back and forth between Jason Capel and fans yesterday. I saw one quote on ESPN. You added to that. I didn't know. He definitely said, you all going to disrespect me, all I did for this program. Y'all going to boo me, Jason Capel said. But I didn't see this quote that you added from him. He said, I held this blanking thing together when Matt Doherty tore it apart. What did he mean by that, and what's going on here?
Yeah, there was actually more to that, but I couldn't include any more because there were just a lot of expletives. But he was upset. I think that Jeff discussed it afterward, that Jason and North Carolina's basketball program have a very complicated relationship. He was set off by a tweet that was produced Wednesday morning previewing the game that he viewed as a diss. And what he was saying there with the Matt Doherty thing, I mean, if you look, Doherty coached Capel there at the tail end of his time in Chapel Hill, and it was kind of a disaster for the Tar Heels. Doherty's last two seasons, he went a combined 27-36, missed the tournament both times, and Jason Capel was like the lone bright spot on those teams. And I think that he feels disrespected and he's hurt that, his alma mater can't remember the player that he was and all that he did for that program. So yeah, there was a lot of discussion about that relationship last night in the post game with Jeff Capel, obviously with Jason saying his own thing outside the locker room after the game. And then of course, a couple players also weighed in. It was a very interesting scenario.
It's the biggest story from the game. Actually, ESPN has a headline on its main page regarding this. Jason Capel going at the fans and the fans going back at him. Is there anything else that we're missing as far as the North Carolina official basketball Twitter feed before the game tweeted out, either it was a photo of the official game program that they handed out or they sort of replicated one? Tell us what was on that and whether we should view this as anything other than a diss at Jason Capel.
So the photo was of a player, his last name is Lebo. He's a walk-on, Creighton Lebo. He's a walk-on junior player who hasn't played a lot, but his number is 25. And in that photo, that graphic that they tweeted out, Lebo has his head turned. He's smiling and is sticking his tongue out. So I guess that can be interpreted as a little bit of a shot towards Jason, being that Jason wore number 25. They picked a number 25 for this specific game to advertise. And, how often do we see a walk-on who doesn't play a lot as the advertised player on a game graphic on game day? So that probably was a targeted thing. Jeff said after the game, he said, it was pointed out by one of his assistants. He was hoping Jason didn't see it. He clearly did. And that's really what set him off. So I don't know. Maybe we're digging into things too much. Maybe it was overanalyzed. It was just an innocent tweet with no poor intent by some social media intern for the North Carolina basketball program, but I could see how those connections could be made.
We had Josh Rountree on earlier today, and I asked the question, those of us who, Pitt has been so bad for so long, it's hard for me, and I'll admit it, to believe that this is real and actually happening. How good is this Pitt team, and are they for real, if you will?
I do think they are for real, Ron. Here's a number that I kind of look at as a qualifier as to make them a legitimate tournament team. Pitt's played 11 ACC games. seven of those games have been decided by five or less points. And those seven close games, Pitt's 6-1. So it knows how to win down the line. When it needs a stop at the end of the game, it can get that stop. When it needs a bucket at the end of the game, it can get that bucket. And it's not just one guy carrying this team. This wasn't a couple years ago where you had Champagne really putting the rest of the team on his back and scoring and rebounding and doing everything. It's a different player every night. Nellie Cummings was the leading scorer against North Carolina Wednesday night. He was 8 of 11 from the floor. You've seen Blake Hinson do it. Jamarius Burton has done it time and time again. Greg Elliott's had some games, as is Nike Sabande off the bench, Fetty Federico as well. So, I mean, it's a complete team with a deep roster. It showed that it really learned from that 1-3 start when it wasn't playing well. It's evolved since then, and it's competitive in every single game it plays.
All right, Noah, give us the magic number here. I was a little surprised last night that Pitt was only in Joe Lombardi's last four in here. It would seem like their resume is better than what odds makers, what Lombardi's of the world, what voters, Jeff Sagarin, computers, whatever, is affording them. So what's the magic number here to make this actually happen? What do they have, 8 games left in the ACC plus the tournament? What do they have to do to ensure this is going to happen, that they get into the dance?
I think if they finish out these 8 games at 6-2, you're a 22-win team with a winning record against quad one competition. I think that'll be enough. I think right now Pitt's being penalized for its poor non-conference play, which is a fair point. I mean, if you look, it started 1-3. It lost some games on the road or at home against West Virginia, at a neutral site against VCU and Michigan, and then on the road against Vanderbilt. Those aren't four great losses to have. And when you look at the net or KenPom, those are algorithms. They don't take human element into account. So they don't consider the fact that Pitt has changed and developed as a team over the season. So now what Pitt has to do, well, what it had to do was beat some notable opponents. Well, it did that. And then it had to earn some road wins. Well, it did that as well. So now what it needs to do is show that it's not just a team that plays well against good competition. It can beat teams it's supposed to beat. And it was doing that for a while. The Florida State loss at home a few weekends back kind of negated that point. It was its first quad four loss. But Pitt has 8 games remaining. 6 of them are against quad three or quad four teams. If Pitt can go 6-0 against those two teams, Pitt can go 6-0 in those 6 games, excuse me, I think it will be fine regardless of how it performs in the ACC tournament.
On the surface, that might sound very encouraging to people. What you just said actually concerns me. So you're telling me if they lose at Florida State, they've already lost to a decent team there. They lose to Miami, a ranked team. And let's say they were to lose at Virginia Tech, which has already beaten Duke, Syracuse, and North Carolina. That wouldn't be the upset of the century, right? So you're telling me if they go 5-3, they might still be on the bubble.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, again, they've been fighting their way off the bubble since their 1-3 start. That's something. Non-conference matters when you're playing in a conference like the ACC, which is having a down year. Those conference wins don't mean as much, and those conference losses mean a little bit more against you. So I think that, you know, Pitt had those two quad one games on the road against Virginia Tech and Miami. If Pitt can just get one win out of those two and then just avoid any embarrassing upsets, they can't lose against a Boston College or a Louisville or a Georgia Tech or even a Florida State. And if it does lose one of those games, it's going to need to win both of the big games on the road against Virginia Tech and Miami, and probably one game in the ACC tournament at least to feel safe on Selection Sunday. Now, if they go 4-4 down this stretch and do well in the tournament, maybe not win, but get to the semifinals or the final, they should be okay. I mean, they do have a good resume, but if you're looking for a scenario where Pitt doesn't need to do anything in the ACC tournament to feel safe on Selection Sunday, it needs to finish at least 6-2, 7-1, I think, in the regular season.
Where are you, Noah? The airport? Things sound very busy.
Sound like
there.
An airport to me.
Yes, I am. I'm here in the Charlotte airport for my layover. It's jam-packed. I'm standing in a corner by the fire escape, trying not to draw a ton of attention to myself.
Let me guess, you're probably delayed a couple hours? Is that part of traveling, right?
No, actually, no delays. Everything's going on time, which is a rarity, I will say that. But, yeah, all's going smooth here.
Well, in some ways, you're a better man than Josh Rountree, and I never thought I would say that. But thank you, Noah.
All right. Thank you.
See you, buddy.
All right. Take care.
Noah does a great job covering that team. I don't know, Ron. I still feel like this is very, very thin ice when you look at their schedule here. You go on the road.
Well, they have to finish at Notre Dame and Miami, right? I think the last two games.
Yeah, and plus you have Boeheim. Obviously, he's Boeheim. He always has talent. They could beat you. At Florida State, they've already lost to. And then, like I said, at Virginia Tech, they've already beaten Duke, North Carolina, and someone else I just mentioned that I forgot about. So this is a little shakier than I thought. It really is. It's a little bit shakier than I thought it was. You're telling me Pitt could go 14-6 in the ACC and miss the tournament. That's what he just said.
I think that win last night really helps them. And unless they really have a loss to, like, as he mentioned, Louisville or Boston College or Georgia Tech, those teams are incredibly awful. I think you add those three wins.
But that's not what he said.
I know, but I'm not necessarily agreeing with him. I think they're, you know, they have a real nice win against Northwestern of all teams in their non-conference schedule. Northwestern is in the field as of now. I think they're in a pretty good spot. I want to see what the rankings come out. The bracketology comes out after last night's game. I think they'll jump from 11 to 10 to maybe 9.
I think so, too. I just think...
But if they have some bad losses...
Is Florida State a bad loss at Florida State? I don't know.
I think Florida State at home at the time
that was
a
bad
real
loss.
Bad loss. I think Florida State's a pretty good team. You're on the road. I don't know that I would consider that a bad loss.
Well, I wouldn't either. That's my point.
Definitely the Georgia Tech, BC, Louisville. Louisville's their next game at home on Tuesday night. I mean, they're just dreadful.
Right. That's not the ones that concern me. The ones that concern me are at Florida State, at Virginia Tech, at Miami.
And Notre Dame.
And maybe Notre Dame.
On the road.
Although Notre Dame is who have they beaten? I'm just surprised that we're still talking about a team that could be 14-6 and miss. And if all these, I mean, there was a reason Lombardi had them on the bubble. There's a reason that in these net values they do, that they're 59th, like 30 spots behind West Virginia. Seems a little bit shaky to me, Ron.
I think the ACC not getting a lot of love, not getting a lot of respect.
That's true. Man, if you can go 14-6 in that conference,
it's a major conference,
and miss, that's bad. Folsy, final thoughts on that?
They can't afford another embarrassing loss. They can't afford another bad loss. If they can just avoid the bad loss, they'll be okay, I think.
Well, what would you consider a bad loss?
The Louisville,
Well, see,
Georgia
that's not
Tech.
What he said, though. He said that they need to beat those teams, but that they could lose. I don't think at Florida State's a terrible loss, or at Virginia Tech, or at Miami.
Do you think there's any consideration from the committee that they look at those non-conference games at the beginning of the season and realize that this is a different team than they were at the beginning of the season?
I mean, they got beat by Michigan by 31. Yeah. They wouldn't lose by 31 to
now,
Michigan now.
Right.
No. I don't know that
and
they
the
lose
West Virginia
by 25
loss.
To West Virginia.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's always
does
the question.
Does common sense come in at any point, or is it just all computers?
No, I think that the committee considers many, many, many different things. Yeah, this is a different Pitt team, a better Pitt team, but it's not like those games don't count.
Sure.
And then they've lost to a couple of unranked teams in the conference. The Vanderbilt loss wasn't great. I don't know. If you're asking me, I'd have them in. I don't understand why they haven't cracked the top 25 or Sagarin's top 60 or why Lombardi had them where they were. They beat an average North Carolina team on the road. That's a nice win. It'll boost you a little bit, but it's still not a very good team. So it's not my opinion. It's seemingly everybody who rates college basketball, including Noah, we just heard, has them as hardly any guarantee to get in, which is surprising to me. That's all I'm saying. Vanderbilt's 10-12, 3-6. Oh, my God. Vanderbilt just lost to Alabama 101-44.
Yeah, 50. The Corsi was talking about that the other day.
So Pitt lost to that team. That factors in here, Folsy.
Yeah, it does.
Coming up, we talked about eras of quarterbacks. I want to ask Ron about this. This one's ending. Aaron Rodgers is one of the last guys hanging on here from his era. Was it the best era of the Super Bowl of the of since there's been a Super Bowl, was that group of quarterbacks the best ever? We'll talk about that next on Cook and Joe. All right, Ron, I'm getting notifications from people that I was saying Joe Lombardi instead of Joe Lenardi.
You know who Joe Lombardi is, right?
Yeah, that's why I was saying it. He's the coach of IUP and a very successful one at that.
Former Pitt assistant, correct?
Yes, and neither one of you jumped in and told me anything. What's going on here? You just let me keep going with Joe Lombardi?
Yeah, my bad.
So now I'm taking someone named Ricky Monster.
Oh, there's a guy you don't want coming after you.
Not the Ricky Monster, no. So my apologies. Although, who am I really apologizing to and what for, Ron? I don't give a crap what the guy's name is. Exactly. We all know who I'm talking about. And Joe Lombardi's a real person who's a very good coach, who I played golf with, by the way, at one of our fan events.
Did
He's
you?
A very good golfer, and he thought I was very good. Said I'm coming along.
I question his judgment then, if he thinks so you were very good.
For those offended by that, it's Joe Lenardi. And yes, it's been Joe Lenardi for how long has he been doing this? 100 years, Ron?
He's been doing this like Mel Kiper's been doing the draft, right?
Yeah.
Forever.
Yes.
And I mean, he's become huge, but I mean, does he just sit around with those computers every day?
That's all he does.
Punch in here, punch in there, quad one win, quad three loss.
Yes. That's
what
he
does. Is that a life?
That ain't bad.
What do we do?
Probably for a lot less, too, right?
Yeah, exactly. I got asked which era of QB was better by a very nice man on Twitter, because this is the end of this one,
basically.
Wasn't
Ricky Monster, was it?
Not Ricky Monster, no. So he had the era that saw Ben, Brady, Peyton Manning, Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, include Eli and Phil Rivers, because they're two Hall of Famers, probably. Then we had an era with Montana, Marino, Favre, Kelly, Elway. We had the 70s. Help me out here, Bron. Bradshaw, Staubach, Tarkenton, Stabler.
Yeah. I mean, I think of Ben and not Ben, Bradshaw and Staubach were the two for me.
Yeah.
You know, Dan Pastorini.
Not Stabler, huh?
Yeah, but I'd take Staubach over Stabler.
Yeah, and Tarkenton, for me, was a great quarterback.
That question's fairly easy for me, though.
And then we have this one coming up. So what was the best era, Ron?
Well, if you're including Montana with Elway and Kelly and who am I missing? Marino,
Favre.
That, to me, was the best.
Hmm.
All Hall of Famers.
I think this one was the best that we're seeing end.
Manning.
I'd love to see a great comparison where you just list the number of MVPs, Super Bowl MVPs. For me, it would go Brady, Peyton Manning. They lead this class. Ben? Aaron Rodgers?
Pretty good.
Breeze?
Pretty good.
Eli sneaks in with two Super Bowl wins. Those are the two for me as well, but I'm giving the edge to this because they got the GOAT. Bolsey?
I guess Montana would be part of that group.
I mean, it's hard.
I never included him. I guess I go back to the 83 draft class.
Yeah.
When it was Elway, Kelly, Marino. Those are the three guys I consider from that era. But Favre, you're right. And Montana, it's hard to, you know, a lot of people tell you Montana may be the GOAT. Mike Francesa and his...
Well, he's on your team there. Montana,
that's what
Marino,
I mean.
Elway,
that,
Kelly.
To
yeah.
me, he makes that group even better.
Yeah. I mean, it's an unbelievable group, but it would take these guys to beat him, and I think they do. I mean, Drew Brees is an afterthought here. And he's a Hall of Famer.
And he's a Hall of Famer. With a lot of records in the league.
A lot of them. And they don't even have Aaron Rodgers on here because he's still playing. Four MVPs and a Super Bowl MVP. I give them a slight edge. And I think you're as strong as your weakest link. And the weakest link is Eli, who beat Brady and won two Super Bowls. How about you, Folsy?
I was just going to ask. You settle the debate. Maybe you have another one.
I don't know that he settles it, Ron, but he's certainly welcome to weigh in.
The deciding vote, if you will.
I mean, I'm looking at this era that just passed, and there's
probably three of the top 10 quarterbacks of all time. Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, and I put Aaron Rodgers in there. Maybe he's 10.
What about Ben?
Think he's top 10 of all time?
Yes.
Ben?
Yes, I do. Do you run?
Maybe around 10. Okay, you're talking about three of all time. How about Montana, Marino, Elway, Jim Kelly?
Montana, Marino, Elway, and Kelly have as Brady alone, I believe, has as many Super Bowl wins as all of them. That's the thing. You got this guy.
You said earlier it goes beyond just Super Bowl wins. How many playoff games did those guys win? Jim Kelly didn't win a Super Bowl, but he won a lot of playoff games.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well.
And Montana did win the Super Bowls.
He did. But all those
Marino
guys.
Marino did not, and Kelly did not.
How many did Elway win? Two.
Two.
None for Kelly, none for Moon, one for Favre. That's
none for,
three.
None for Marino.
Three and four is seven.
Montana, seven, and that's what Elway did alone.
That's what Brady did alone.
Or Brady did alone.
And then you add Manning with two.
Two.
Right.
Ben with two. Breeze with one. Manning with two.
Right.
And Rodgers with one.
And Rodgers with one. I got to go with them. Now, what about this next era? Can they live up? Who is leading the way here? Obviously, it's Mahomes. It's Burrow.
Allen.
Josh Allen.
Allen.
Herbert.
Trevor Lawrence, I think, will be in there. Jalen Hurts has to suddenly be in there, right? He wins the Super Bowl.
This is a great group, too. But they got a long way to go. They got to prove it to match up with those other guys.
They do.
Man, we just assume that Joe Burrow is going to win multiple Super Bowls, but I mean, I know it's early on, but he might never win one.
Maybe he's the Dan Marino or Jim Kelly of this group then.
He could be.
I don't think this group is going to match up. We just mentioned about eight complete legends of the game. Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't think this group's going to measure up.
They're going to need at least two or three other guys that are going to come in the next couple years that are going to be part of this era for them to compete.
Maybe to Ron's argument, that first group that he picked has three absolute legends. Montana, Marino, and Elway. That's to take nothing away from, in my opinion, the other guys. This group has two absolute legends, and that's Brady and Manning.
That's why but then you included, Montana and Favre. Wow. I don't think of those guys when I think of that group, I don't know why. Probably should.
And when I'm thinking of this group,
well, you're thinking
still
of one draft class, but they were obviously in the same era, right?
Right, right.
There's still a lot left to be determined for this group. And Herbert hasn't done a lot of winning yet at all.
No. I mean, it takes a while.
Right.
It did for a lot of these guys, by the way.
Has there been a better draft class than that 83 class?
What was Ben's? Him and Eli and Phil? No, not better than 83. If we're talking strictly draft classes, that's the best of all time. It's the best. And Kelly.
And Kelly.
It's the best of all time.
The K-Gun. You remember the K-Gun? You have good memories of the K-Gun?
Of course.
Remember when he played for the Houston Gamblers?
Yes, and we begged for him to come to Buffalo.
Yes.
Absolutely. All right, coming up. Man, did this Dulac answer out of his mailbag jump off the page like it was Dominique Wilkins in a dunk contest, Ballsy. I can't believe he answered this question the way that he did about the idea of trading Mike Tomlin in the wake of Sean Payton being traded. We have to talk about this.
He seems to have a couple of those in every one of these mailbags.
He does. It's great. It's postgazette.com, Jerry Dulac's mailbag. One of the reads of the week in this town.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.